The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Adam William Arnold, not with the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
How goes it?
We're going old school, just Joel and I.
Yeah, it's been a while, it's been a very long time.
Yeah, we've just done one with no Mo on it. It's a way back machine. We just saw Money in the Bank. I'd say a thumbs in the middle show?
Yeah. I would say, but the thing with this is it wasn't necessarily the best, like, lights out show I've ever seen. It wasn't terrible. The undercard was all right. Like, we won't really touch on that. The undercard was very predictable in what happened with everything. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, this is kind of that paint-by-numbers feel to it.
By the way, on a somber note, rest in peace, Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black.
Yeah, dead.
They died tonight. They died. They're dead.
And well, Brian and AJ are in trouble because they upset Vince. So
yeah, we've now seen AJ die in a show, and he came back to life, so maybe. And we've seen just AJ was buried alive, so it was a question if AJ was still alive or not. But Rey and Aleister Black are just dead.
Yep. Well, we didn't see any splat, so
I mean, Rey used superpowers, and maybe Black used supernatural abilities, we're guessing.
Maybe he's absorbed some of the Undertaker powers.
This is when Rey should address as Superman or something. If Rey had, like, a Superman superhero flying on top of it, it would have been great.
Well, I'm still waiting for Brock to fly in with a helicopter to steal the Money in the Bank.
Yeah, this is true. Was that an idea that someone pitched?
Yeah, someone threw an idea that Brock's going to fly by with a helicopter and steal the Money in the Bank again.
That's great. I would say this is probably the first Money in the Bank where both winners were a surprise to people.
Yes.
Specifically the men's, but Asuka, I think we all wanted Asuka, but I don't think any of us saw Asuka, especially in a match with Lacey and with Nia in it, and Baszler.
No, like, I thought Baszler or Nia was winning. And when it didn't happen, and when Asuka's up there, you're like, okay, well, she's going to get bumped down. She's going to get bumped down. Just never happened. And just on a quick note, I got to say that the beginning part of that match was amazing. I love the cinematic thing. Like, it was so dumb and stupid, but so entertaining. Once they got into the ring, it was a little meh, but the two winners of it, like, and Josh, you got to tell us who won the men's, because I would never.
Oh, yeah. Otis did. And we're like, they're going to do something funky, aren't they? Well, that's this is amazing. We're like, I'm in the middle of saying, this is bull. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of into this. Because the thing is with this Otis thing, I'd rather, we'll talk about all the build-up and stuff in June, but so the one thing that you and I were really upset about with Otis at Mania was he was going to kiss Mandy, and he lost that pop, and we thought that was it. And I had talked to you kind of as we're watching the show. I haven't really been watching the programming on a weekly basis, this or AEW, NXT, really anything. I've just kind of gone in my own little bubble, and if something big in wrestling happens, it's hard to watch these shows without fans until really watching AEW, which was different. I have pluses on it and negatives on it. Not as far as a show, but with people, we'll get to that a bit. But so this is kind of the first time I've really watched an AEW program in a while. And you had heard that the Otis stuff was one of the few bonuses, and Mandy and Sonya stuff was working really well. And this is just a long-winded way of saying that they saved the Otis pop again. They saved it. And now, like, when all this pandemic and horribleness is gone, you would think that he'd be able to hold this for a year and that fans would be back within a year. Whenever they do it, that's when you get the pop. You get Otis his one big pop again. And I do it at Mania. I think you were talking about that too.
Here's what you do. You have, you bring Brock back. Because the COVID-19 is going to be scared of Brock. It's not going to go anywhere near Brock. So he can travel freely. You have Brock come in and he squashes Adam Cole. He squashes Drew McIntyre. And he squashes Braun Strowman. He has all three titles. And this dominating, terrifying, horrible thing. And the pressure is on Otis to save all of WWE just... when Brock sells the caterpillar, and he just sells it like death, and he'll sell it like Shawn did the big boot, where he'll take the big boot, get up, flop around, and then lay back down again. That's how Brock's going to sell the caterpillar. And then Otis is leaving with Mandy and Sable.
Do we think in any serious sense that Otis can be WWE or Universal Champion?
I mean, here's the bar for the WWE Champion. When you have a guy that has no build, no heat, and suddenly very big, and his name Jinder Mahal suddenly become WWE Champion.
It's true.
And I mean, you've had David Arquette as world champion. Otis is a wrestler.
Well, I mean, he's probably the biggest babyface in the company right now.
I think it might be still Drew, but I think Otis is
one of those two.
Yeah.
Like Otis is that he's the Zack Ryder. He's kind of in a way of a Brian in a way of everyone just wants to get behind him. Drew is the typical, he's going to kick your ass baby face. Otis is the feel good story baby face, which they get every so while, but like what they did with Zach, they blew it. And now they have it with Otis. And I think all of us would have, I don't think, my only concern is it's one of those situations of, did they do this because Otis is kind of hot right now? And again, it's so hard to tell. Because we don't get the inside reactions. We only have the online reactions to things, right? But Otis was still hot when we had audiences going. It was this, though, just a situation of a swerve for a swerve, which I'm never a fan of just doing a swerve for a swerve, unless you have a payoff for it ultimately.
Well, if there's one thing we've learned in the world wrestling entertainment, they have no plan. They have a very thin plan on what they're doing. So this could easily just been, you know what? Let's just do this for the sake of doing it. Otis easily could lose the briefcase to a heel. That could be...
Right, you're right. He could lose it to Ziggler.
Yeah. Or he could have a big moment with Mandy, and then he's got Mandy and the world title. Otis is the world kid.
I think you need to save it for the pop. I think that's the pop that he didn't get at Mania. Like, there's so many little things at Mania that we were robbed of, like Drew's moment. But I do feel that Drew will have that moment when the fans come back that he will get an ovation. I think you and Mo hit on it so brilliantly on your guys' show that you did, that when Strowman comes back, if he's still champion when we have fans, and look, Florida is allowing fans fully into the arena, what, in 20 days here, I believe? So... I'm going to expect that the full sale will have fans there. I don't know, and you guys brought up the point too, if Strowman even gets cheered or not.
This was the first real show that I saw as Strowman as champion since Mania. Like, I've seen a little bits of SmackDown, but you just see how he's presented, and you're like, oh, God, this guy's DOA. This presentation sucks. Like, and even his Bray and Braun match was fine, and I think they're building ultimately to the Fiend versus Braun, and I guess they probably didn't want to do back-to-back cinematic matches again. Mm-hmm. So, and because the main event, for the most part, was a cinematic match, it was one part Taker and AJ, and then one part Johnny and Ciampa, and one was good and one was bad. So I guess that's probably why they went with Bray. I thought Bray looked fine here. Like, they had a fine 3-star match.
I think they did the right thing. It's fine. Like you said, 3-star right in the middle there.
And I think the big thing is you need to give Braun a win. That's why going to the Bray thing seemed weird. But ultimately, I think when the Fiend becomes the one that hunts Braun, it'll be different. This is kind of that prelude to the story. It seems a little weird because if I'm Bray Wyatt, I'm like, well, I just want the Fiend to beat you. I want to be champion. But I guess it was that offering of him joining and Bray trying to recoup some of his lost followers. Though it's proven that Bray, when he sends people off, he at least taught one of his followers how to become a cult leader. So, I mean, that's got to be tip your hat to Bray for that.
Definitely. I think Backlash will potentially have fans in it, but if not, will be the last pay-per-view we can probably guarantee we'll have one more of these cinematic matches, I imagine, right? Because that's a month from today. Do we think, before we kind of get into all these and running down all this stuff, do we think Backlash will have fans in attendance? Yes or no?
I think so. I unfortunately
think... Do you think social distancing, like they're talking about, like every third seat? Is that what we're looking at, you think? I guess that means fans regardless, but...
I mean, you've seen pictures of the airlines that say that they're getting rid of the middle seat and then they're fully packed. I think social distancing will go away and they'll say they're going to do it and then you're going to take a look at the audience and go, wow, they're really close together.
So you think this is the last pay-per-view that we have for WWE without fans?
Yeah, I do. I do. Unfortunately, I do.
Does this mean this is the last cinematic match for a while, you think? Or is The Fiend and Bray and Strowman, does that have to be a cinematic match?
I think so. I think that's probably going to be because we've seen what The Fiend can do in ring, and that's the one detriment to The Fiend, is it doesn't fully work unless he's destroying someone, where you can get away with a little bit more gimmicky stuff with a cinematic match. But yeah. I'd be curious to see what they choose to do. If there's no fans, then I absolutely think there'll be a cinematic. If there are fans, then I'd say it's probably a 50-50 split.
I'd imagine that Backlash will be more or less a lot of rematches from what we had tonight. But we'll get to Backlash in a second, because I have points that are from talking about what you're going to have. So really a full rundown of the show, more or less. Jeff Hardy in the pre-show gets a win. I think that's someone that the one thing I will say that's been going on with WWE is a lot of more traditional builds of guys that we haven't seen for a while, right? You've had the kind of the jobber matches that you used to have back in the 90s. So you've seen the Lashleys, the Jinders, Nia for a bit there, Jeff Hardy. You're seeing these guys that they obviously want to put ahead, and they're getting those typical matches that build them back up, which are not bad to have, because when you get them in main matches, then they look that much better. I tend to believe that, and you're going to hate this, I think Drew's next opponent, if it's not Seth, is Jinder.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, I don't hate that, because if you're heating him up and you have a story there, then there are two things that work to build that match. Ultimately, you need to be feeding things to Drew. Because you need to build Drew up for next year's Mania. You need to have him as a killer. So whoever he faces, that it's that much bigger of a deal. You should be building it up so that next year's Mania, Drew's on a collision course with blank. And that means you got to heat up some guys to feed to Drew to help fuel his fire and keep his, as Strowman would call it, his McIntyre Express going. Oh, that's a dumb shirt. Anyways,
it's not good.
You want to heat them up, and Jinder and
Strowman have the Strowman Express too.
I think it was Strowman. It was Express or it was something.
Strowman has something like that too. Strowman has the Strowman Express shirt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Drew doesn't have it. That's that. Thank.
Oh, he's Claymore Country.
Yeah. Thank God.
Which is not. It's much better.
Yeah. His shirts are great too. I think Drew, I really hope Drew has an incredible reaction when the crowds come in. But Jinder doesn't bug me if that's the next thing. It's weird that him and Seth shook hands, because then it makes me wonder what's next for Seth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Jeff, I don't know where he fits in overall. I mean, if they were going to do something with him and Wyatt, it would make sense and maybe bring some Nero stuff or Willow stuff out. There's no reason he couldn't be Willow or anything, but I think they're going to go more the path with Jeff. It seems like the redemption story again with Jeff. They're going to go that route, I think. And I don't know when, if there's a world title in his future. I could maybe see him beating Sammy whenever Sammy comes back for the IC title. I don't know what the end goal is with Jeff, but they're obviously going to give him one last big push.
See, now my thing is, obviously, when you say that, the first thought is, well, you build to him versus Bray at Mania. I think that would be the redemption arc for Jeff. And one last hurrah, but we don't know when Roman's going to be back. And that puts a wrinkle in what Roman will throw off if Jeff is going for either the IC or the world title. It's just as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. They did all those videos of Jeff on SmackDown, right? They did the 3-part video, and then they had this match for Cesaro that he wins. So I don't know. Like, it's hard. So, like, you bring to the good point with Roman. Like, so I don't know, where is the landing spot for Jeff Hardy?
I figure it's the IC title, because that's something that is you don't have too much worry. Like, the IC title has been so devalued that it's not like it's a big deal with that title. But at the same time, you can put it on Jeff, and it's a nice happy moment.
Yeah. But right now, I think where they are, other than Strowman, the champions work well. But I mean, for Strowman, I think it's a guy that's got the title for a while. We go to the tag team match. There's nothing really to talk about here, right? New Day wins.
Status quo.
Is Xavier close?
I don't think it's till the fall. Like, it was his Achilles, so he could be gone for a year.
That's a bad one. That's the one that whenever an NBA player gets it, that's the one that more or less ended Kobe's career, right?
Yeah. I don't know when Woods will be back, but it'll be interesting to see how they use him once he gets back.
Yeah, it happened in October, so yeah, it'll be a while. It's about 9 months for an NBA player. Well, I'm just saying this because since I report NBA stuff. It's 9 months for an NBA player. So they said it would sideline him 6 months to a year, the initial injury. So it's October. Let's just count all that out. Let's just go from November. So November, December, January, February, March, April. So he's officially been out for six now.
Yeah.
My best guess would be maybe they bring him back with the fans.
Yeah, if he's healed, because they mentioned him, so.
Yeah. I have nothing to go. I'm happy that Forgotten Sons are on the main roster now. Seems like they can maybe do damage. It seems like kind of a team that Vince wanted to get behind. But, you know, like the Revival said in Jericho's podcast, the reason they wanted to leave wasn't because they were unhappy with WWE. The reason they were unhappy was because of WWE and the tag team division.
Yeah, it's very stagnant, it's very flat, and it's very... it goes only so far. It has a definite ceiling on the ceiling. Like, it has two ceilings on it, and you can't break through.
Bobby Lashley and R-Truth. So we were going to talk about this, so we'll just talk about it here, Joel. R-Truth thought he was facing MVP. He faces Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley wins. We'll talk about the R-Truth side of this, because there is some storyline stuff there. So Bobby Lashley, the bigger part of this is that MVP is now with him, and there's talks of a stable of MVP, Bobby Lashley, Samoa Joe, and Apollo Crews, which I am 100% on board for.
If you can, like, anything that you can use to get guys over and potentially build more stars, like, arguably Bobby should be Drew's program for the Rumble, like, heading into the Rumble. Like, that should be his overarching. So if you can get this stable to help protect and heat up Bobby Lashley to the point where he looks like a genuine killer, doesn't beat Drew, and then in frustration goes after Brock, and that's the Mania match, then that's simple, easy booking.
Well, so here's the thing. One of the last times I ever watched Impact fully, this was the group they had. It was MVP being a mouthpiece for Lashley that really helped. That's when Bobby Lashley still wasn't a great promo, right? That's when... He said, what was that promo he had at SmackDown? He was like, they say that you're something, but I think you're a bastard. Remember that feud?
Oh.
It was with Finlay or something. But then he did this stuff with MVP and Joe, and they had Loki, substitute Loki in for Apollo Crews, who is having a great year and could really use the rub. And MVP is the mouthpiece. You and I had talked about it too. If you build up Lashley to Drew, or even if you finally get Brock and Lashley, MVP is the mouthpiece against Heyman, works perfectly. MVP now is in a perfect role for what he needs to be. He is the perfect new age manager in the WWE. Someone that can talk, he can back it up. He has the charisma. He is an asset for any wrestling company, and I think that's why MLW had him for so long. MVP is an absolute asset, and I'm really happy. If the idea of this stable, I'm all about it, especially if it can help Lashley. Someone you and I, and staying with Apollo, you know, I think this could be really positive, especially for Lashley. Getting him away from Lana and all that bullshit and getting with MVP, it's nothing but positive things there.
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely agree.
I got
a little bit of breaking news.
Yeah.
Aleister Black has tweeted something out 32 minutes ago, and it is a ghost with a white sheet over it. So he's either a ghost or his ghost is using Twitter to tweet things. So we can confirm that in the grave beyond, they have Twitter.
Wow. Now we just need Ray to tweet.
And then we'll know that they're all tweeting.
Yeah. Both of us are thumbs up for this possible stable, especially the fact of MVP on the mic. I'm all about that. I'm fine with that. I mean, the stuff he had with Drew, I thought was really well done. The build-up to Mania. So, and that was just supposed to be a one-off with MVP, right? So we obviously impressed somebody.
All you got to do is impress one person.
The R-Truth side of this, we'll talk about that really quick. He said he's going after Gronk. I guess you and Mo never talked about it, so let's kind of talk about the Gronk of it all. So Adam Schefter originally reported he signed a 2-year deal with the WWE, and the idea was for him to be a wrestler with the company. The 24/7 thing was just the start of things. That's why he took that spot at Mania, and then he came out of retirement. He's going to play for the Bucks. I don't know what the deal is with the contract and everything. I mean, obviously, WWE doesn't have a major problem with it because they put a post congratulating him for going back to the Bucks. The one thing that's been the best press is his 24/7 title, because Bill Simmons podcast, First Take, Katie Nolan, Jay and Dan, everybody's talked about Gronk being the 24/7 champion. I think I would really try to keep that title onto him to any possible NFL season, or have Gronk on appearances with the title. I don't know if I would just put it. I'm sure the idea here is, like, let's just get back in truth and get it back in house, but I think they should have way more fun with it.
Oh, I think they can absolutely have more fun with it.
But they probably won't, hey? I think we both think they're just going to have Truth beat Tom. I mean, not Tom, fucking Truth. Just have him beat Gronk.
Unless Tom wants the title.
They should give the title to Brady for, like, a little bit. R-Truth have a hoodie on. And then Gronk's like, no, I thought I cut away from you, Belichick.
Oh, God. The hoodies with the cut-off sleeves.
Yeah. But they have it, like, kind of in a darker side, obviously, because obviously Belichick and R-Truth are a little bit of different shade on the arms there. So you have to hide that a little bit, but maybe do something like that to do it. Or, like, have, like, Gronk at a party or something, and he gets attacked that way.
Should have stayed with the Patriots.
Should have stayed. By the way, just because I like to do this every once in a while when we do this, can you tell me how many times R-Truth has been 24/7 champion? So I try to find it here quickly.
20 times?
Oh, yeah. I have it. How many times he's been? Wow. So 20 is your final answer?
Yeah.
He is a 35-time champion. 35-time champion.
Man, Cena could never get those numbers.
How many? Holy fuck. This can't be right. I'm trying to see how many, the list of how many 24/7 champions have there, how many iterations, reigns of a 24/7 champion have there been?
I have no idea.
There's been 96 different people, different reigns of the title. The longest, I think, is Gronk. 45 days now Gronk's had it. Truth I'm thinking's had to have it longer, though, right? No, that's the longest now. Gronk is the longest 24/7 champion of all time. The longest before that was R-Truth at 35 days. Yeah, that was the longest before that. Remember when Riddick Moss had the title and they were like going to do something with it and then nothing happened?
That's right, because he beat Ricochet. That's when we're like, oh yeah, Ricochet's done. And just killed off Ricochet.
Yeah, so Drake had 6 reigns. Elias had 4. Carmella's had 2 reigns. One of the Bali boys has had 4. Maria had the 1, but it was a 7-day reign. And then there's a bunch of other people in 11. Santa Claus. I don't remember Santa Claus being 24/7 champion. Do you?
No, but I mean.
So the Revival were too.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah. Truth going after that. Bayley beats Tamina. No turn from Sasha yet. Do you think? I don't really care about the Tamina side of this at all. Did you think they're just waiting to have fans for the Sasha turn?
Yeah.
Strowman and Bray, we kind of talked about. I thought it was fine. Like you said, it's a nice, like, solid 3-star match. I think they did a good job with props with the black mask. He beat Bray. He hasn't beat the Fiend yet, and that's probably where we're going at Backlash. That'll probably be potentially the last cinematic match we get for some time. And I think at Backlash, Bray becomes champion again.
Yep. And then we just pretend that Goldberg never had the title.
Pretty much. And then we get Bray Otis.
Ooh, yeah.
What if? I mean, I want the pop to happen, but what if they have? You could do the cinematic match, right? And you could have the Fiend win the title, and then he pops up in front of the crowd with the title, and then you think that you do the Johnny Gargano and Ciampa spot with the thing coming up, and then you hear the Heavy Machinery music come, and then out comes Otis.
And Mandy trips the Fiend, and then
yep.
Then Otis's 2020 is downright incredible.
Yep. Then we have Drew McIntyre and Seth. These two had a fine match. Nothing crazy. Went 19-20, by the way. It didn't seem like it went that long, but yeah, went 19-20. Drew wins. They shook hands, like you said, with him and Seth. I don't know what Seth's direction is. I would not be surprised if it's Jinder next, just because there is a story there with him and Jinder.
Yeah, and you know what? Ultimately, I look at it and I go, they put Drew over Clean, and Drew needs Clean wins. That's the biggest thing for champions. You need to establish that he is a quality champion. He's not winning by flukes. He's not winning lucky. He's not the jolly Willikers babyface. This guy's a killer, and he's going to boot heads off. And that was driven home again today by beating Seth, one of your top guys in your company.
I agree. So that's done. They timed the women and the men's matches out. They're more together. These two were just, it started off really fun. There was, you know, cameos from Brother Love, Doink, John Laurinaitis, a callback to The Undertaker with AJ, which is, I guess, a signal that this is not done, which is good, because AJ obviously wanted that. What do we think, SummerSlam?
Maybe, yeah. It could be SummerSlam with these two. They could actually have a real match, which I think Taker is probably wanting one last match based on. I haven't seen episode 1 of the docuseries.
I've seen one part where he said the Roman match was dog shit.
I'm really curious to watch this. I'm really curious, but I think he wants one last match, and AJ's basically this generation Shawn Michaels, where you're like, yeah, you can have a good match with AJ. So I think AJ will help put that final ribbon in The Undertaker's career, which will be really weird to think it'll be AJ Styles. But Yeah, like, and the cameo from Paul Heyman, like, there were a lot of, like, them actually in Titan Towers, like, how they introduced Asuka, like, everything that they did within it, I thought was fun and enjoyable, and just a nice little stupid thing that pro wrestling was doing, and then they just got to Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa-esque production style.
Yeah, the women's ladder part sucked.
Yeah, it's... I didn't like that certain people didn't make it. Like, it just seemed very weird that you would have certain people that just couldn't get up to the top. But I don't know. Once they got in ring, it was mediocre. But outside of the ring was fun. Like, that Vince segment was great.
That was great. And I should note, too, Mo was talking about all the cuts that actually got me dizzy from the cuts, especially in the women's match. Men's was a little bit better. We'll get to that. Yeah, the AJ and the Bryan part, it's crazy. These are two of the most talented wrestlers of the past. Like, if we did just the top talented wrestlers of the last 20 years, right? If we just start this millennium with the top talented wrestlers, it's what? Them, Kenny, Okada, and Tanahashi, probably the top five.
Yeah.
Maybe Nakamura's in there.
Joe.
Like, they're the two, like, them, Okada, and Kenny are, like, the main four. That's the Mount Rushmore, right?
Probably swap Kenny with Tana.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And it's like, not only are they two of the best in-ring guys, but they're two of the best just, actors, comedic timing, knowing their role kind of guys. Pardon the term, phenomenal.
I mean, even the bit where he gets the weight put on him from Otis, and he's yelling at Ray, and he's yelling at the pitcher, and he punches it, and it's just, they fit perfectly in their roles, and even the line where it's like, well, you asked to readjust the chairs again, mm-hmm. It's like, just, it was great, and I think Bryan had a blast with this. Bryan is an incredible, just an amazing performer. And you could just feel how much fun he had. It just felt like he had a blast with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's nice to see guys have fun.
Well, yeah, Bryan just walked in and he had the biggest smile on his face, right? And I just keep on, and whenever I see that, I am so happy, because when I was watching Total Bellas, I remember that time when he didn't have wrestling and he was so depressed. And like, you know, he had Birdie on the way, and he had this loving wife and everything in his life, and he was just devastated not to have this thing in his life. And getting to see him have that, it made me so happy, because I always think about that. It was so dark, that Bryan guy that you watch in ROH and everything like that, and WWE when he took the title, how much he loves it. So just to see something like this and stuff he's done with Gulak, I'm really appreciating it right now with all the stuff that Bryan just gets to have fun with. And I think Bree talked about it a little bit in the book too, right?
Yeah, I believe so. It's just a lot of fun. Like, sometimes I know that this isn't going to be some people's cup of tea. It's perfectly fine. Wrestling is, to me, it is a form of entertainment, and there are different genres, and there are different ways to do stuff. As long as you're drawing in money, and you're raking in people wanting to watch and garnering interest, then you're doing something right. And I enjoy this. I had a lot of fun with this. Like, this was just stupid fun. Like, there were points, like, I don't want Drew to be involved in slapstick, because that's not Drew McIntyre's role. But this...
I didn't really want Alistair. I didn't really want Alistair, but I think they did a good job with him in it.
I didn't feel like there was ever anything comedic from him. Like, it was a lot of... Like,
Except for him dying. Yeah, the food fight too, and I was like, you know, images of Belushi, and I was like, you have to nail this, you have to give this to Otis, because he's the Belushi, and they killed it with him being in the Belushi role from Animal House.
I thoroughly enjoyed what we got from it's funny to think Otis won.
Oh my god. By the way, too, the Stephanie spot, was that just a curd in the punch bowl? It was so cringy. Compared to Vince turning his chair around and then writing notes or whatever the fuck he did, that was fantastic. Stephanie's was just weird. Like, was it on a TV? Was she walking by? It was so weird. And Dana, who we all kind of want to root for as well, right? She just won the Rumble in the Bank. She slipped on the floor. Poor Dana Brooke.
Just couldn't catch any luck.
But, I mean, I think you come out of this, you want to do something that's memorable, right? Like, she had a memorable spot. Carmella had the – Shayna is invisible in this match. Like, can you tell me something that Shayna did that's memorable?
No, and that's part of the problem with Baszler.
Mm-hmm. She was not made for this. This was a bad match for her. You talked about Drew in this. And I think Drew would be good with it because Drew can have a comedic sense. But she was probably the worst person to be in this match. Because this is not her style. This is not her style.
There are some people that can do a lot of things. And there are some people that can't. And she just... I think that it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm. I do too. I in some ways, I almost would have just had even Sarah Logan just be in this and do some weird Viking thing, or have Carrie in this and do, like, maybe do a pirate thing with her.
Have her.
Had a lot more fun with Carrie.
Yeah, like the goal should have been to put the most fun performers that you had in this to just have them go. To that, just to make this enjoyable. Like, I think Corbin played his role well.
He did. I thought Corbin was great. I loved, it's probably the thing of, I haven't liked Corbin do anything so much of, he threw the weight against the glass, and he did such a good job of acting of being like, holy shit, what did I just do? I'm going to get in so much trouble, which is the reaction you should have. I was talking to you about it when we were watching. It was like, this is such a basic reaction. But it's just a reaction you would have, like, oh, shit, I just broke the glass. My boss is just fucked.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly natural reaction to have. I'm glad, like, and I really appreciated him having that look.
And the 7 years of bad luck from breaking,
right?
From breaking that. And we saw at the end he had bad luck because Elias came back and whacked him.
He did. Although he did kill Ray, and now Alistair's a ghost. In some ways, you know, with the Baszler thing, I know she's the champ, but the show kind of did miss having Becky on it, and we haven't got a chance to talk about it on a pod, so I'll just kind of naturally bring this in before we kind of get to the wrap of the Money in the Bank. Becky has that Marvel role, potentially. We don't know what it is. I had heard a little birdie say potentially Sue Storm the other day, which I don't think is happening, but no. The other one I had heard was She-Hulk.
Oh, that's interesting. That's actually really interesting. The rumor is that Rock and Cena have both been taking her under their wing to get into Hollywood. I mean, maybe she's getting closer to being a part-timer than we expected.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a crap ton of X-Men rolls up. Rogue is another one I think would be perfect for her. I think Rogue is the best one for her.
Yeah.
As far as the look, she did really good on Billions. She was out of the park. I don't really watch Billions anymore, but my grandparents are currently staying with me, and they were watching it, and I just watched for the Becky scene. Like, who is that actress? She's phenomenal. They were really impressed by her. By Becky's acting, and she was really good in that. And I don't think she's going to be in the Fantastic Four. I'm pretty sure that's Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. I think that's kind of one of the worst kept. I think it's one of the worst kept secrets right now, with Cena probably being the thing, which is the rumor. But if she is She-Hulk or if she is Rogue, then I don't think we're going to see a lot of Becky Lynch.
No, I think that her run on top is going to be short, but it's going to be crazy because you're going to look back on it. And if she has a decent career, like, no way, I could be wrong, and I'll be glad if I'm wrong, but I don't ever see her being, like, an Oscar-nominated actress.
No, but, is The Rock a Cena? No, like...
They're doing just fine.
Yep, and I mean,
I think if Becky finds that role and becomes like a female, potentially a female action star slash, because she has comedic timing, so she could do comedy as well. You have her fill in that role. That's not a bad spot to be in.
If you remember Sean, when they did the Marine, Sean was saying how impressed he was that she picked things up so fast as an actress on the Marine, when they did the Marine together with him, obviously Miz.
Right.
Sean had an interview, and I never thought too much about it till like the last few days. And Sean was saying, like, holy shit, like, that girl picked, and this is before she's the man. Sean was like saying, like, I'm telling you, like, she really picked it up quick. Like, I was kind of surprised. So, yeah, I guess we'll see what the Marvel rule is. I mean, it happens all the time. Like, Edge just talked about he was up for a Marvel role and it got turned down, and he's never said what it was. And Orton recently came up and said he was up for a Marvel role and it got turned down. Now, with Edge's, I tend to think that may have been a little bit bigger than Orton's. I think Orton's would have been a second bit one, all respect to Randy. But Beck's, I think, could be pretty big, especially with Rocky and Cena backing her. Even though Rock and Cena are in the DCEU right now in their respective characters, I'm sure they both have people at Marvel that would want to hear them about somebody that's up and coming. And she has Dave in the corner of Marvel as well, so.
Yeah. See, that's a big thing. Batista's over there, and if Cena somehow gets it as a thing, then that, no, it's going to be real. When he yells, it's clobbering time, you're going to have memes out there.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. As far as the match goes, then, yeah, Asuka wins, which we were very shocked about. And then Otis wins, which we were like, what is going on? Not upset about it at all, but just very surprised that Otis won the match. Much better result than Brock winning last year. And before we kind of talk about that, I will say, like, again, like, there was that comedian guy that came out and used a lot of unnecessary, horrid language that should just never be used, and knocking wrestling fans for watching this kind of entertainment. And you know what? I got to say, and it sounds corny, but, like, I had, like, a half an hour run there where I got to watch via, like, FaceTime with my friend and laugh and enjoy something and not think about this bullshit pandemic that we've had and not being able to hang out with my friends or watch sports. It was a 30-minute escape that was really, really, really nice. And I really needed that personally, and I'm really glad that we got to have it.
Yeah, that's one of the thing that that's why not flipping gears necessarily, but that's why I enjoyed the AEW main event. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed Matt Hardy having costume changes and running people off the road.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
And we will get to that. As far as Asuka goes, so I believe she is Raw.
Maybe right? They want to take the title off. Becky is the longest reigning Raw Women's Champion.
I don't see her taking the title off of Bayley, so I think it's Becky.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, because then that carries on that long-standing feud between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think you need the crowd for it.
No. I'm okay if you put the title back on Asuka and you heat her back up again.
Shouts to Asuka. She knew, she came in, and we've talked about this, she figured out what works for her. She changed a little few things. We were really worried about her, but When did this change for Asuka, when she kind of really figured out who she was in the main roster?
No crowd.
Yeah, that's just true, yeah.
And when she was on commentary. That time she was on commentary and she's yelling, it worked. It clicked.
Well, they let her not have broken English. Andrew Fun and I talked about this when we did it. I wish they'd do subtitles or a translator, but what she has now works.
Yeah, and just keep it going. Keep it going, because she's conveying all the emotions that you need.
Absolutely. And as far as Otis, I don't know where this is going.
Like I said, he's coming for Brock.
I think as far as Backlash goes, I'm assuming it's The Fiend and Strowman. And then we'll go from there.
And Drew and
Jinder, tentatively. I'm assuming Charlotte will defend the NXT championship on Backlash.
Against Rhea Ripley?
And EO. I'm assuming a three-way there. Because we have no takeovers, right?
Yeah, no takeovers.
So then I'm guessing Bex Baszler?
Maybe Nia, and then Asuka cashes in? Or how long do you wait before Asuka cashes in?
I think you can wait. You still want to see if you can get a Money in the Bank thing with fans, so you still wait. I mean, again, like, we think Backlash potentially could have fans there. Not that we think it's right or not. It's just that it's Florida, and in 20 days, people are allowed in the stands.
Good fun.
And I'm trying to think what else. Bailey, Tamina, or Lacey again? Maybe, yeah, Dana? Maybe Carmella? I would be fine with Carmella. They had some good matches before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Naomi seemed to have disappeared. I guess, now, was it her husband that got hurt? Was it that Uso?
Yes, I think so.
So the Usos are off TV again for a while because Jimmy got hurt. So ACL tear too, I believe, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was not a good injury.
So, yeah, I don't know if Naomi will be on TV or not, because when for some reason when she's gone, I mean, and all the stuff with the Anawana family. Do you want to talk about that quick?
Yeah, sure. Let's hit on it quickly.
Yeah, just quick last two things here. So, yeah, Roman was cut out of Raw. He wasn't showing the Money in the Bank stuff. He talked on TMZ, said he has two newborns. With weak immune systems, which went into his idea here. Obviously, he's still in remission. And Vince's opinion on him changes like the wind.
Yep. But I got the feeling that he is more or less status quo with Roman, and he will be back eventually with the company, and he will be right back on top. I think that was my impression, at least, of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Unless Vince gets in a sour mood and does something.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just thought we kind of hit on that. Just a minor news note there. And then I had one side thing I wanted to talk about at the end, but AEW, I got to watch that. So I have, you know, you told me that this was kind of a polarizing match. Corny had some thoughts, and some other people's had some matches. Comedy. My thought was more just the overwhelming amount of people backstage and kids backstage. They did have masks. And I guess I'm like, welcome. It's the thing we've talked about, right? Like, you welcome it because, like, oh, that's so cool to have it. I was just so caught off by how big. Again, I haven't watched AEW really in, like, weeks. So I've just been, whenever I've seen any wrestling, really, it's just been seeing the stuff at the PC, right? I was just caught off guard, just the enormous, like, how big everything seemed, and the pyro and the lights. It just really caught me off guard. And then they have all the wrestlers around, but then they also have some other people around. And then when they fought backstage, there was, I would say, almost 50 people, 40 people backstage. I think that's a fair number. And I was both like, this is cool, but also uncomfortable with it still. I think that's going to be a hard thing for a lot of us, to taking our time to do it. You know, they had their mask on, they were social distancing, so they were all doing the right thing, but that was my takeaway. The match itself, I thought, was a really fun match. I thought it built on the feud. I thought you built on the lore of the Matt Hardy character, and you built on the story. It's the thing with AEW that I love. I haven't watched it for 5 weeks, and by JR, Shivani, and Excalibur telling me what's going on and everything they're doing in the match, I'm all caught up from this one match. You barely had to tell me anything. I got the idea of what was going on.
That cart chasing scene just I don't know if you heard it, but when Kenny's going up on the scissor lift, Matt goes to him and goes, "Do you want to be a spot monkey?" And Kenny was like, "Yes," and he's like, "Indulge in your addiction." And then Kenny climbed up and did a near picture perfect moonsault on a less than sturdy apparatus and didn't die. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a great moonsault. Like, Ibushi and Io Shirai would be very proud of that moonsault.
He's doing it to get Ibushi's attention.
Yeah, so I was very happy to. Every time I watch AEW, it gets me mad I don't watch it more, because every time I watch it, I just leave really satisfied. Like, hey, really satisfied by watching it.
You gotta watch next week, because we're getting Pineapple Pete versus Chris Jericho.
I think we should. We should do a live watch next week.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm in. for the live watch. And then the last thing I wanted to talk really quickly about, because you sent me a few experts. I just wanted to talk about this Bella book, because we're not going to get a chance to do it again. I don't want to go into long form. Just number one, the Rousey thing was like, what? This is my main takeaway from it as far as the Nikki side of things, right? Nikki was saying, oh, we got bullied when we first came in, but then talks about AJ, which she did bully badly to the point that AJ was one of the reasons AJ left the company, despite the company blackballing her husband and firing her husband on their wedding day. She still came back and worked for the company. And Nikki and Brie were not nice to her and consistently took shots at her. Nikki gets mad because she doesn't get the mic time that AJ does. Well, you can't talk like her at all. AJ's a much better talker than you. And then she talks about, oh, it was disrespectful for what Ronda did. It's like, but you guys had your moment for the Royal Rumble. Everybody got their pop. You were down to the final two. And then this is the big surprise that everybody was waiting for. That's how wrestling works. You think you'd be in the business so long, you'd understand how wrestling works, that Ronda was going to get the biggest pop, but they saved 30 spot for a legend like Trish, and then they saved a surprise spot for you to get a pop. They saved 30 for Trish to get the pop. Lita got her pop, and now Ronda gets her pop there.
And Asuka got her pop for winning.
Yeah, I don't understand how it's disrespectful in any way. I think it's a sense of the Bellas thinking that someone's overshadowing them.
Yeah.
And the pettiness that the Bellas have with that. It's funny, like, we did this pod, I love the Bellas. I still think, I love Brie. I think she's just a great mom and everything. I'm not saying Nikki won't be or anything, but anytime Nikki opens up about the wrestling business, I just find her to be such a petty person.
Yeah, yeah. And we also learned that her and Cena's relationship is under lock and key under an NDA.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot from Cena. From when I watched Total Bellas. And that's one of the reasons I don't watch Total Bellas anymore. When she started dating the dancer, I'm like, I don't care. I was more interested when she was dating John and when Brie was dating Brian. Once that happened, I was like, I'm done with Total Divas.
Yeah, that's quietly gone away. You'll see commercials for it and be like, eh.
They're done. This is the last season of Total Bellas. They're done. So I think Divas is getting close to ending. Just really quickly, what did you think about those experts from the book?
It just seems like someone, like if I was Asuka, I would be a little miffed, because ultimately winning that first, because that was the first
women's. Asuka maybe. That's a good point.
I think Asuka being a little miffed is okay, but yeah. Asuka's never said anything. And
no.
And ultimately it is. Ronda is at that time, getting Ronda Rousey was a big deal. And Ronda Rousey drew an eyeball. So you have to give her that moment. You didn't give her the Rumble win, so that's one good thing at least. But Ronda, like, you knew what, you couldn't throw Ronda in at the beginning, because then everyone would be like, okay, well, Ronda's in the Rumble. You had to save it for the end. I mean, you could have done it the next night on Raw, but you want to put more eyeballs on your product the following night.
Dude, how crazy was Twitter? Ramona Shelburne, ESPN, they got all the press for it they wanted. That's what everyone was walking away talking about. That's what the wrestling business is. That's why they signed Gronk. They wanted the buzz on ESPN and everything. That's what it's about. That's why David Arquette won the championship to help the movie. Sometimes you do that shit.
The Arquette one I'll never agree with. But
it's not good, but I'm getting the method behind the madness. Rather, it's right or wrong. I get the method behind the madness.
I think it goes back to the wrestling business continues to grow and evolve, and you have to learn with it. And that was a point that Meltzer was making online about Cornette and someone like Orange Cassidy. Cornette hates Orange Cassidy, but Orange Cassidy is drawing in a casual viewership, and his merchandise is selling like freaking hotcakes.
Sure is.
Like, it's follow the money. And same thing with Ronda. When she comes in, you follow the money.
Absolutely. And then the AJ part.
Man, AJ was so good. And it just it sucks. Like, it just sucks, because I think it was a situation where it's kind of like Brett and Sean, where I don't think it was Vince necessarily this time taking his two favorite figures and bashing them together. But I feel like it was just a natural, neither of them liked each other, and that led to a big conflict between one another.
Yeah. I think, too, the fact of just saying, oh, we got bullied and everything like that. I agree with them that, you know, maybe they deserve some side of the women's revolution to a degree, but at the same time, you don't, because the women's revolution, it started a little bit with Paige. Like, we've never had this full talk, and then we'll end on this. It started a little bit with Paige and NXT with the Emma match, and Paige deserves some credit for it. But it really, really started with Sasha and Bayley. That's when it started.
Four Horsewomen. That's the matches that they put on and the consistent drawing of eyeballs that NXT women's crop had is a big part of it. And I mean, you're seeing that other women are thriving under this new era. Like, I think Bliss is perfectly fine in her role. Like, I think she's in a better spot than if they didn't do this. If you didn't have the Four Horsewomen, same with someone like Asuka. Pardon?
Yeah, she would just be a bikini model. Same with Dana.
Yeah, and this way they're actual performers that are involved in the product. So,
and there's nothing wrong with that. Like Scarlett Bordeaux and Caden Cross, like, had one of the biggest announcements entrances we've ever seen without the fans. And Scarlett Bordeaux is going to be in that role, and she's going to be fantastic at it. But we've seen that she can wrestle as well. But she understands her role.
The thing with professional wrestling is you have to have different people. You can't have all the same person in a same role. You have to have different roles for different reasons, and done tastefully and done appropriately and done to the point where you're telling stories and multiple stories at the same time. And you got to be willing to have like a Scarlett Bordeaux over here, a Nikki Bella over here, Bayley over here, a Sasha Banks, a Charlotte. Like, it's letting all these women interact, because that's one thing that I think AEW does very well, is everyone on that roster is different and unique and is not a cookie cutter, kick pads, tight wrestler that looks like I was made in a WWE video game. Like, everyone within AEW feels very different and has their own moveset. Some moves definitely overlap, but that's pro wrestling. But everyone feels different, and that's what works.
I agree, and that's the best way to end it. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Everyone enjoy the rest of their Mother's Day or getting into a Monday or whenever you listen to the One Fall podcast. Potentially, we'll be back for a recap after AEW this week, since we're going to do a live watch on that. And see what happens in the crazy world of professional wrestling. Until next time, folks, cheers and enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And good night. Bye.